Modern rock and roll guitar, the kind that takes odd noises, distortion, and feedback for granted, owes a lot to the part Cherokee guitar prodigy Link Wray, who just about invented the vocabulary today's guitarists use. In dozens of singles between 1958 and 1967, he explored the instrument's limits. Rock historian Ed Ward tells us his story.
You'd think that the first rock and roll record to be widely banned in the mid-50s would have been by a black performer, but you'd be wrong. Common sense dictates that it would at least have words, but it didn't. Rumble was something guitarist Link Wray had come up with when he was playing a dance and someone asked for a song they could do the stroll to. It's too slow for that, but its menacing sound and the amount of gang warfare teens were waging across the country in 1958 when it came out saw it banned in New York, among many other places. It still managed to hit number 16 on the charts. Not that Link Wray ever really engaged in a rumble himself. He was born in rural North Carolina in either 1929 or 30, and christened Frederick Lincoln Wray, Jr. In 1955, young Link and his brother Vernon, or Lucky, formed Lucky Wray and the Lazy Pine Wranglers, a country band, and set up in Washington, D.C. But the nation's capital turned out to be a poor place for their act, so they put away the hillbilly costumes, donned black leather jackets, and announced that they were the Wray Men. They'd already cut a couple of country records for Starday that had gone nowhere. Then disaster struck. Both Link and his brother Doug, who played drums in the combo, came down with tuberculosis. Link's lungs were so damaged that the doctor advised him not to sing, which, since Lucky had left the band to try for stardom under the name Wray Vernon, left them as an all-instrumental combo. Fortunately, instrumentals were in at that point. So when their homemade recording of Rumble landed on the desk of Archie Blyer of Cadence Records, home of the Everly Brothers, he played it, and hated it. His teenage daughter was in the room, though, and she said it reminded her of the Rumble scenes in West Side Story. Apparently the record had had another name, but Rumble was what it was known as from then on. Rumble over Rumble must have unnerved Archie Blyer, because Link and the boys soon signed a 3-year deal with Epic and had a hit with Rawhide right off the bat. It wasn't as big as Rumble, but it was pretty catchy and went to number 23 in January 1959. Virtually overnight, the boys were the biggest thing in D.C., and Link continually played with his equipment to develop weird new sounds. He'd punch holes in the speaker cone with a pencil, turn the volume way up, and experiment with the knobs on the guitar itself, which, because he played fairly cheap ones, also made a difference. But despite such modern-sounding tracks as this one, Comanche, Epic wanted Link to make records that sounded more like Duane Eddy, the other big guitar hero of the period. They also wanted to establish him as a teen crooner, and I'll spare you the results of that brilliant idea. The fact is, he was dropped by the label after just over a year, but that was okay with him. Mostly this was due to Vernon, who was already Link's manager, opening a recording studio, Wray Vernon Recording, on Vermont Avenue in Washington. This became the Wray Men's laboratory.
In the hearts of men. The shadow knows.
Hey,
records were cheap enough to make, and they happily signed with Swan, a tiny Philadelphia-based label that printed Don't Drop Out on its records. In return, the Raymen painted a swan on their equipment trailer and continued to tour the country. They even gave Swan a hit. The Ripper was a modest hit in the summer of 1963 and was the sort of record that Pete Townshend referred to when he famously said that he'd never have picked up a guitar if it weren't for Link Wray. Of course, most of the musicians they met thought they were completely insane. Nobody was playing anything remotely like this at the time. But it was just those changing times that spelled the end for the Raymen's hits. Swan loved cheap records and would often buy masters other labels had passed on. One such was a 45 they'd picked up from EMI's British wing called She Loves You by a group called The Beatles. Suddenly, instrumental records were passé. This never even slowed down Link Wray and the Raymen. They kept delivering singles to Swan, which put out a few albums on the group too, until 1967 when the label went out of business. Since then, Link's kept on rocking. In 1970, he put out an album on Polydor that touched on his Native American genes. He's part Cherokee. And did moderately well. And since then, he's continued to tour. And anytime he wants to see his legacy, all he has to do is walk into a record store.
Ed Ward lives in Berlin. And while we're on the subject of music, I need to correct a couple of mistakes we made on the show when our rock critic Ken Tucker presented his Best of the Year list. In referring to Pam Tillis's tribute to her father, Mel Tillis, I described him as the late Mel Tillis, when in fact he's still very much with us. And when Ken meant to refer to Waylon Jennings' death in 2002, the name Merle Haggard came out instead. Our apologies to them and to you. At least this offers a good excuse to close the show with a recording by Merle Haggard.
Think I'm gonna live forever. Hey, that ain't on my list of things to do. Think I'm gonna live forever. Hey, it feels so good just to be out of love with you.
Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Patty Leswing, Ian Chillog, and Jessica Chu. I'm Terry Gross.